Good morning. I'm now calling this first Standing Advisory Committee meeting of 2008 to order. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for being here this morning. New and continuing members and official observers of the Standing Advisory Group, PCAOB board members and staff, everyone here who is supporting the functioning of this meeting, those here to observe, and also those listening in on our webcast this morning, welcome. I would like to add my very special welcome to the new and reappointed members of the Standing Advisory Group. In May 2007, the board began soliciting nominations for the members whose terms were expiring this year. The board received many nominations from prominent and highly qualified persons from whom you were selected. Thank you for generously accepting this appointment and to participate in this very important role at the PCAOB. I also want to thank all those who submitted nominations and the continuing SAG members in each of the observer organizations for their commitment and participation. Because we have so many new faces at the table today, I would like to take several minutes to go around the table and have each of you very quickly introduce yourself. When doing so, please don't forget to turn on your microphone and to speak directly into it. I'm Tom Ray. I'm PCAOB Chief Auditor and Director of Professional Standards, and I'm also the Chairman of the Standing Advisory Group.
I'm Jennifer Rand. I'm Deputy Chief Auditor in our Standards Group at the PCAOB.
I'm Dick Dietrich. I'm a Professor of Accounting and Chair of the Department of Accounting at The Ohio State University.
I'm Ernie Ball with Mayor Hoffman and McCann, CPA firm.
I'm Kurt Schacht with the CFA Institute, the Chartered Financial Analyst Group down in Charlottesville.
Randy Fletcher, I'm the Vice Chairman responsible for professional practice at Ernst & Young and for the current year the Chairman of the American Institute of CPAs.
I'm Liz Fender. I'm a Corporate Governance Advisor with Governance for Owners in Charlotte, North Carolina.
I'm Bill Gradison, a member of the board.
Wes Williams with Crowe Chisk & Company. I'm in charge of the firm's national office functions.
Ed Nussbaum from Grant Thornton. I'm just here as a panelist.
It's a very important role, Ed. Thank you.
Greg Jonas from Moody's here serving two roles today, both as a new SAG member and also as Ed Nussbaum's bag carrier.
David Becker, I'm a lawyer at Cleary Gottlieb Steen & Hamilton.
I'm Vin Coleman. I'm the professional practice leader at PricewaterhouseCoopers.
I'm Pat Harnett. I'm the president of the Ethics Resource Center.
Dan Gelzer, I'm a PCAOB board member.
Shelley Stein, I'm a partner with Grant Thornton and a returning SAG member, and I'm here to watch Ed Nussbaum today.
Good morning. I'm Gary Kabrick. I'm Vice President, Chief Accounting Officer of Xerox Corporation.
Hi, Arnie Hanisch. I'm the Chief Accounting Officer at Eli Lilly and Company.
I'm Bill Miller, Senior Investment Officer for the Ohio Public Employee Retirement System.
Zavonna Palmrose, Deputy Chief Accountant, Office of Chief Accountant at the Securities and Exchange Commission.
John White, Director of Corporation Finance at the SEC.
Russ Golden, Director of Implementation Activities at the FASB staff and Chair of the Emerging Issues Task Force.
I'm Bob Dacey, the Chief Accountant at GAO.
David Julian, General Auditor at Wachovia Corporation.
Good morning. I'm Liz Gantner. I am a CPA with Stegman & Company, Director of Quality Control.
Joe Costello. I'm a Professor of Accounting at the University of Tennessee.
Wayne Collins, National Director of Assurance, BDO Seedman.
John Morrissey, Managing Director and Controller of the Fortress Investment Group.
Mark Olson, PCAOB.
Barbara Roper, I'm Director of Investor Protection for the Consumer Federation of America.
Lynn Turner.
So.
Well done, Lynn.
Bob Kippers, I'm Deputy CEO of Deloitte LLP in the United States. I am either a continuing or a returning SAG member. I really don't know, but I'm here either way.
Warren Malmquist, Vice President, Internal Audit and Ethics for Olson Coors Brewing Company.
Charlie Niemeyer, Board Member, PCOB.
Chuck Noski, I'm a retired Vice Chairman of the Board of AT&T and currently Chair of the Audit Committees of Microsoft Corporation.
Senior Vice President, Chief Accounting Officer, and Corporate Controller of Comcast Corporation of Philadelphia.
I'm Galen Hansen, one of four Coloradans on this committee. I'm also a partner with Earhart, Keith Steiner, and Hotman in Denver, a large local firm where I'm the partner in charge of quality assurance. I'm also a member of the Board of Directors of the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy.
Good morning. I'm Bob Tirola. I'm Chief Financial Officer of W.R. Grace.
Cindy Richland, the Director of Corporate Governance for the Employees Retirement System of Texas.
Howard Johnson, I'm the retired head auditor at Lowe's Companies and JCPenney.
I'm Mike McCauley, Senior Corporate Governance Officer with the Florida State Board of Administration.
Greg Skates, Deputy Chief Auditor, PCAOB.
And I think we had at least one person come in. John, would you like to introduce yourself?
John Kellis, Chairman of International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board. And sorry, I missed the run round. Could we just go round again?
Perhaps at the end of the meeting. Thanks, John. Is there anyone else who hasn't had a chance to? Okay, great. There's one thing I would just like to note. Jeff Steinhoff recently retired from the U.S. Government Accountability Office. So, sorry about that, Bob. He had a long and distinguished career in public service, and he actually provided observer comments to the Standing Advisory Group since our very first meeting. And I just wanted to recognize that his retirement, and if he's listening in, thanks, Jeff, for all of your contributions. And just want to welcome Bob Dacey, who is taking over that role for the Government Accountability Office. So thank you all for introducing yourselves, and I welcome you to the SAG. Before we move on to the agenda, I have one announcement to make. I am pleased to report that yesterday the board approved the staff's recommendation to issue for public comment a proposed new auditing standard and related amendments to the board's quality control standards. The proposed standard engagement quality review would supersede the board. I encourage everyone listening to obtain the proposal from the board's website. We have three significant items on our agenda today. There continues to be an intense focus on the importance of accounting and auditing to our capital markets and to society in general. There currently are two federal advisory committees studying issues affecting the auditing profession, one sponsored by the Securities and Exchange Commission and one by the Department of the Treasury. This morning, we will learn about and discuss implications to the auditing profession of a recommendation of the SEC's Committee on Improvements to Financial Reporting that is related to professional judgment. Two members from the advisory committee will provide an overview of the recommendation to frame our discussion. The Sarbanes-Oxley Act includes provisions that speak to the auditors and the audit firm's responsibility to supervise audit work and to supervise persons associated with registered public accounting firms. Today, we will hear a presentation on the supervisory concepts included in the securities laws, and we'll seek your advice to help the board in its consideration of how it should approach the concept of supervision. In October, we discussed with you a number of possible implications of the SEC's proposal and concepts release related to the filing with the SEC of financial statements prepared in accordance with International Financial Reporting Standards, as issued by the IASB. One of the subjects discussed was one of the board's interim quality control standards, known as Appendix K. Today, we will hear from a panel composed of representatives from registered public accounting firms about the quality control practices of their international networks.
The purpose of this session is to foster a discussion about the global audit networks and their quality control practices to help the board consider what changes might be needed to Appendix K or other quality control standards. I have two more matters to mention, and then we can start the agenda. You are not permitted to use cell phones in the lobby here at the Army Navy Club, and men must wear their jackets when they enter the lobby. We will run this meeting in the manner similar to the way we have in the past. When you decide you would like to comment, please put your name tent up on its side like this, and we will call on you in the order in which you've provided your indication. So now I will move on to the first agenda item, which is a panel discussion on a proposal relating to judgments made by financial statement preparers and auditors. In its progress report dated February 14, 2008, the SEC's Committee on Improvements to Financial Reporting, also referred to by some as CIFR or CIFR, proposed that the SEC should adopt a judgment framework for accounting judgments and that the PCAOB should also adopt a similar framework with respect to auditing judgments. We are fortunate today to be able to hear from two members of the CIFR subcommittee that focused on the development of this proposal. Ed Nussbaum is the chief executive of Grant Thornton, LLP. And Ed, I'm pleased you could be here today. Greg Jonas, the other subcommittee member presenting today, was going to be here anyway, as you know, he's a new member of our standing advisory group. Thank you, Greg, for participating in this presentation. I will now turn the floor over to Ed and Greg. After their presentation, we will open the floor to SAG members.
Thank you, Tom. I'm going to make a few opening comments, turn it over to Greg, and then make a few closing comments. And first, let me issue the standard disclaimer here that these comments are Greg and my personal comments. They do not represent comments of the full CIFR committee. They don't represent the conclusions of even our subcommittee, and they probably don't even represent the conclusions of Grant Thornton or, dare I say, Moody's. I'll let you say that. As Tom pointed out, the committee was formed as an advisory committee to the SEC in July of 2007. It was formed to examine U.S. financial reporting, our system, all aspects of it, the process for setting standards, for preparing financial statements, for delivering those financial statements, for regulating compliance, for the audit, oversight, et cetera. And I think it's pretty straightforward why the committee was formed. And it included things like the growing use of international standards and a wide variety of other things. To execute on the objectives of the committee, there were four subcommittees formed. Greg and I are members of subcommittee number three, which is called Audit Process and Compliance. Mike Cook, I think everybody probably knows the name, is the chairman of that subcommittee, and Linda Griggs, a well-respected attorney, is the other member of the subcommittee. We have addressed several things, and we'll continue to address other things as well. We just had a meeting recently where we'll address a wide variety of other things. But one of the things we looked at was professional judgment, and have developed, at the chairman's request, a professional judgment framework. Now, where did this come from? Nobody's really clear how this evolved, but from the Sarbanes-Oxley legislation, the SEC was required to do a study of principle-based standards. They did that study, issued a report in 2003, and I'll quote you from that report. It said, "A move to objectives-based accounting standards will require behavior changes, including a change in the way that preparers and auditors exercise professional judgment." So the genesis of this framework was intended to help change behavior, help change the process, help improve documentation, help improve disclosures, help improve all aspects of how preparers reach their professional judgments in issuing their financial statements, as well as auditors and regulators and others involved in the process. In 2006, the SEC Small Business Advisory Committee issued a protocol safe harbor addressing professional judgment. We did not copy that. We did not use a lot of the wording in that. We do not talk about many of the same things we talk about, but it still is necessarily of relevance. Professional judgment's been around for a long time. It's always been necessary and appropriate in the preparation and auditing of financial statements, as well as the regulation of preparers and auditors of those statements. However, the continued progression of standards more towards specificity rules has caused some to assert that preparers are not allowed to exercise judgment in their application. Further, some believe that auditors have increasingly insisted on imposing their judgment on preparers. Our subcommittee concluded that a carefully considered framework that sets forth a strong process that can be expected to result in well-reasoned and supportable professional judgments, and one that specifies that the judgment process must result in an answer that conforms to generally accepted accounting principles, that framework would improve the quality of preparer judgments and make it more likely that preparer judgments will be respected by auditors and regulators, particularly where competent and informed professionals might reach different conclusions. Now, nothing in there is intended, and as an auditor, or some might say a former auditor, it's very important to me and to our committee that nothing preclude the auditor from questioning the work of preparers. And there's nothing in there intended to prohibit that. In fact, it specifically states that the auditors and regulators can question and reverse unreasonable judgments. And we certainly envision a open channel of communication between preparers, auditors, and regulators. And I might also point out that this was not intended to solve all the problems in the world. This is intended to improve the process for judgments, not necessarily to catch material frauds, not necessarily to fix all problems in financial reporting, but to improve the quality of the preparation and auditing of financial statements. And I might also point out that as an individual, I was a little bit skeptical when I first heard about this, but I turned around my view and really became a major supporter of this framework as I realized that I really thought it would improve the judgments that are made by preparers and improve the process that we as auditors go through and the behaviors and processes of regulators. It is something that, when I discussed it with our own professional standards people, they were a little skeptical at first because they realized this might require us to do more work and more documentation, and our preparers, our registrant clients, to do more work. So, with that said, in the process of deliberating about the preparers framework, it became clear that there are issues related to judgments made by auditors and regulators that are by their nature significantly different than those made by preparers. And as a result, we've recommended that the PCAOB consider issues related to judgments made by auditors, its own inspectors, and enforcement personnel. But I'll discuss that more after Greg goes through the details of the judgment framework. Greg?
Ed, thank you, and good morning, everyone. I'd like to cover briefly our goals with the judgment framework. I think there are five. What specifically we are recommending with this framework. And finally, discuss some observations about the framework itself. First, what are we trying to do here? Five things, I think. First, we're trying to improve the quality and reliability of reporting-related judgments. These judgments are critical to the quality of financial reporting, obviously, and some misjudgments have been at the heart of some very important financial reporting failures. Second, we're trying to improve investors' lack of confidence in judgments affecting financial reporting, confidence that's been undermined by some judgment failures. Third, we're trying to establish criteria for judgments and thereby reduce uncertainty about the characteristics of sound judgments. You know, given their importance, it's kind of ironic that there just isn't all that much in the literature that describes the characteristics of good judgments. It's kind of you know it when you see it. Maybe we can do better than that. We think we can. Fourth, we think it's important that a judgment framework help enable principle-based standards. If we're going to move toward principle-based standards, which necessarily rely more on judgment, we think a judgment framework can help. And finally, it can improve preparers' and auditor confidence that regulators will respect well-reasoned judgments. So what are we specifically recommending? First, we recommend that the SEC adopt a judgment framework for accounting judgments, and the committee has put forward an example of a framework. Second, the PCAOB should also adopt a framework with respect to auditing-related judgments. The committee notes that we should take care to implement this in a way that does not limit the work of auditors and regulators. What do we mean by judgments? Well, we mean cast a broad net here. Judgments include choice of accounting principles, application of those principles, financial statement presentation and disclosure, judgments about measurement, and the evaluation of evidence. So it's a broad net related to judgments. The concepts supporting the framework are a few. They are, first, that the judgment framework would not eliminate debate, nor should it attempt to do so. If anything, it focuses debate. Second, the framework organizes analysis and focuses preparers and others on areas to be addressed, thereby improving the quality of judgment and the likelihood that auditors and regulators and others will accept high-quality judgment. Third, the use of hindsight to evaluate judgment where the relevant facts were not available at the time of the initial release of financial statements is not appropriate. Fourth, those who evaluate judgments should evaluate the reasonableness of the judgment and should not base their evaluation on whether the judgment differs from their first choice. And fifth, the framework we do not intend to be mandatory. That is, folks who choose not to follow the framework do not necessarily imply that they've made a weak judgment. Let me talk about some of the components of the judgment framework. The one that we proposed. The framework has two main components. One involves a critical thought process, and the second involves documentation of the judgment and the judgment process. The critical thought process component has 12 parts, and each part is an area to be considered when making a judgment. Thus, these parts do not constitute a process. Processes can be flowcharted, and this judgment framework is not a process flowchart. Rather, they are areas for consideration. Thus, the framework does not in any way restrict analysis. Rather, it offers containers into which analysis is poured. Some components, I think, are obvious and are widely used in making accounting judgments today. Three examples are analysis of the transaction and related facts, analysis of applicable accounting literature, and disclosure in financial statements about the judgment or estimate consistent with today's reporting standards. These, I think, are not surprising. Yet other components of the framework are more subtle, and they are less applied today. And I think they are powerful. They include, for example, that the essence of making judgment is to consider a range of possibilities. Alternative views or estimates articulate the pros and cons related to the range of alternatives, and then explain why you have chosen what you have chosen. Second, when explaining why you've chosen what you've chosen, link the selection to investors' information needs. That is, why is the choice that I'm making best for investors? And second, in the linkage, is linked to what competent external parties are saying about the issue. Judgments are not made in vacuums. And so the more that a party can make a reasoned choice and link their choice to what outside experts, third-party experts, are saying, the more confidence one has in the judgment. Another aspect of the framework that's subtle and important, we think, is to consider the reliability of assumptions and data used. We think a lot of times folks have run with data in judgments without considering really the reliability of the data. And the reliability of the data often is essential to the quality of the judgment. Garbage in, garbage out. Another subtle feature is to seek input from people with appropriate level of expertise and allow a sufficient amount of time and effort for the judgment. We all are familiar with the phrase, a rush to judgment, and that's exactly what we're trying to avoid with the judgment framework. Documentation is the second main component of the framework. And the notion here is to contemporaneously with the judgment document what you've done, and certainly no later than the release of the financial statements. Ed will pick up now and talk about safe harbor issues and then the judgment framework as it might relate to auditors.
Thank you, Greg. Real quickly, a comment on the safe harbor. We are not, CIFR, subcommittee and committee, is not proposing a regulatory exemption safe harbor. The proposal does not contain such a recommendation or proposal. It makes it clear that the framework should not preclude auditors or regulators from asking appropriate questions regarding judgments, as I said before, which is very, very important. We've got to be able to, as auditors, ask questions and as regulators ask questions, even though we are attempting to change the approach that's taking to judgments and the documentation and the behavior. I should also point out that although we talk about safe harbor in there, we leave this up for the SEC to analyze the pros and cons about the safe harbor aspect of this. The framework contains two components, both of which are required: a sound process for making well-reasoned and supported professional judgments, and a requirement that the results of the process result in a solution that conforms with GAAP. We don't go beyond that. It's not intended to protect inappropriate judgments, even when the process has been followed. And it's not intended to reduce, whether it does or doesn't, but not intended to reduce the level of restatements of financial statements. It's intended to improve quality of prepared judgments, and provide auditors with better information to use in evaluating the acceptability of those prepared judgments. Now, let's turn our focus to the PCAOB, because we initially focused on accounting judgments, but we recognize that the auditors, the PCAOB, had a role to play. So the proposed prepared judgment framework was to develop to deal with professional judgments made by preparers of financial statements, and with an auditor's consideration of those judgments. We believe that the existing auditing standards already issued by the PCAOB and out there in the marketplace require an auditor to evaluate the process used by a preparer in making professional judgments as a component of the preparer's internal controls over financial reporting. Professional judgments are involved in the design and operation of internal controls for transactions that occur routinely or can reasonably be expected to occur from time to time. Strong internal controls also recognize transactions or events that are not routine and apply a process for resolving the accounting and disclosure for those matters. Professional judgment framework is intended to deal with these various decisions. There's substantial guidance available to auditors on the evaluation of controls, determining the effect of controls, or the scope of audit work on evaluating the evidence available to auditors to form their audit opinion. But we believe the PCAOB should review existing audit and quality control standards that relate to these issues to assess whether there are areas that are not covered or that may require clarification. I should point out, we don't have all the answers. We're just suggesting that these things be considered. For example, the framework asserts that different competent professionals, given the same information, may reach different conclusions as to accounting and reporting for a transaction or event. Since these situations should normally only result where there is significant uncertainty as to the range of future outcomes, additional guidance or education on evaluating ranges of outcomes might be useful. As intended by the Sarbanes-Oxley legislation, PCAOB inspectors represent perhaps the most powerful influence of auditor behavior available to the PCAOB in fulfilling its objectives. Our experience is even the threat of inspection and evaluation of the results of inspections have had a substantial and very real effect on the mindset and thereby the action of auditors. As a result, in order for improvements in preparer judgments to be appropriately considered by auditors, inspection and enforcement policies of the PCAOB should be clear and communicated to audit firms. The PCAOB should review or develop inspection policies, including training and performance evaluations, that would guide inspectors in the review of professional judgments made by auditors. Some components of the inspection framework might be inspectors should first consider whether the auditor had sufficient evidence to assess the accounting and disclosure of the matter being reviewed. Part of this evidence is the information used by the preparer in developing the judgment in the first place. If sufficient evidence was not obtained, there is an audit deficiency that prevents an assessment of the accounting treatment. If the auditor had sufficient evidence to support a professional judgment on the preparer's judgment, The inspector should assess the reasonableness of the auditor's judgment. In doing so, the auditor should have the requisite accounting knowledge to form an opinion. Just as has been proposed in relation to preparer judgments, judgments made by auditors using a sound and properly reasoned approach should be respected by inspectors in performing their inspections. These policies should be communicated to registered audit firms. It's up to the PCAOB to review and develop enforcement policies that appropriately recognize the effects of auditor judgment on the conduct of audits, and the PCAOB inspection policies referenced above in making decisions related to enforcement actions. Again, we're not suggesting we have all the solutions relative to the PCAOB. We're just trying to raise the issue and really turn it over to the PCAOB to take further action. And with that, I'm going to open it up to questions, if that's okay, Don.
Thanks, Ed and Greg. To sort of frame our dialogue, I'm going to throw a couple of questions up on the screen, and as we move through the discussion with the SAG, I think we'd like to take the first two sort of simultaneously because I think they're related. So comments or maybe questions for the panelists with regard to the objectives and elements of the accounting judgment framework proposed by the CIFR, and secondly, whether the SEC's adoption of an accounting judgment framework would have an effect on public company audits, and if so, what effect? Cindy Richson.
Thank you for the presentation on the proposal of CIFR. I read these materials with great interest, and I kept thinking in the back of my mind, even though the SAG materials were very well prepared, and I even looked at the actual report from CIFR, I was asking myself, why are we focused on this issue? All the data that I've seen so far say that basically the post-Enron reforms are working pretty much as intended. For the first time since Enron, restatements are down in 2007. And then I started to think about, you know, the safe harbor proposal, and aren't the auditors supposed to be experts, and why should we give them safe harbor? And in fact, Cindy Fernelli from the Center for Audit Quality basically said she couldn't come up with a single instance of when the auditor's judgment was second-guessed by either the SEC or the PCAOB. And I know that materiality, there's some proposals to weaken the legal definition, so I'm questioning what the legal implications of this. It seems like it leads to either limited liability for auditors or perhaps escaping liability completely as long as you follow these checklists, Greg, that you mentioned, the 12 items or whatever within the framework. And my understanding also is that there is a professional standard already on the books. So it's not a question of what should the auditor do with estimates or other judgments, but whether or not the auditor actually did it. So I listened to, you know, this proposal about more documentation, and all I think about is everybody complained that 404 drove up auditing costs, and it seems to me that if you do a cost-benefit analysis net-net, this will drive up costs. And if you look at the actual implementation of, you know, under the proposal that certain errors may not be corrected at all or may be corrected later than they're required now, that it would not really be beneficial for investors and it would drive up costs.
Joe Carcillo, is that your name tag? Okay.
Are you going to give the panelists an opportunity to respond to Cindy's question?
Certainly. Go ahead.
First point is just to clarify, there is no safe harbor proposal here. None. Zero. Second is I completely agree Sarbanes-Oxley has been extremely helpful in improving the quality of financial reporting. Having said that, I think there continue to be problems. Too many instances of reporting failures, and I think that weak judgments, poorly reasoned judgments, are often at the heart of when failures occur. And so the goal of this framework is to improve the quality and the reasonableness of these judgments, and I think it can help. It's as simple as that.
Joe Carcillo.
Yeah, I have a few-part question that either Ed or Gray can answer. Why is a judgment framework needed? It's not clear to me that There's a lot of discussion about second guessing. And in my view, the role of regulators is not to second guess, but it is to review judgments. So that would be a first question. The second question would be, how would it benefit investors in our investor groups in favor of the framework? And the third question I would ask, particularly as it relates to auditing standards, is Greg made it clear that there's no recommendation in here for a safe harbor, but there clearly is a discussion of a safe harbor versus a policy statement, and that's essentially been punted to the SEC, the PCAOB, as the case may be. And my third question would be, what, if anything, is the Treasury group doing on this issue? And with all due respect to the two gentlemen, I think most reasonable people would look at the composition of the Posen Committee, and the kindest way I can say it would be to say that it's a bit skewed toward the corporate community, whereas the composition of the Paulson or the Treasury Committee, I think most reasonable observers would say is more balanced. And I think if the recommendation came out of that group with non-dissenting, with no dissenting voices, with everybody on that group signing it, I think it would be very hard to criticize it. It would clearly be viewed as a recommendation that strong investor advocates are in favor of. And since some of those people are in this room, I'd be curious as to their perspective on the issue.
Can you repeat the second question? I got the first and third, but I missed the second.
The second one is, are investors in favor of, why is this good for investors, and are investors in favor of the proposal?
Well, let me take the first question. First, why is this needed? In my view, there's precious little guidance that helps people decide when they've made a good judgment or not. And I think, given the importance of judgments, I think we can make genuine progress in raising the bar in what judgments people make and how they support those judgments. I think some of this can be taught. I don't think judgments need to be purely instinct. So why is it needed? I think it's needed because it can be helpful, and we continue to see reporting failures where judgments are at the heart of it. So I think more consideration and work on this topic is time well spent. I think I come to this with an investor perspective, and I have no interest in limiting auditors or regulators second guessing of judgments. None. I voted for this and, in fact, was integral to articulating the 12 components of the framework because, in my experience, when people get their heads into those 12 areas, they make damn good judgments. And when they don't, problems happen. So I had a burning interest in trying to make progress in the quality of judgments and articulating what constituted a decent judgment. And that was the reason for my support.
Yeah, I just to repeat, in a sense, what Greg said, and as representative of an accounting firm, we can do a better job with judgments and professional judgments, and so can our clients, the preparers, registrants of all sides. I mean, I think no matter who I've talked to, from preparers or auditors, have all said this will require some extra effort in improving how we reach professional judgments. Now, that doesn't help the audit costs. A question that came up earlier might end up increasing the amount of time it takes for a company to document their decisions. It might require, hopefully not too much, but a little bit of extra audit time in reviewing that documentation and providing some guidance. But hopefully it'll actually make the audit go smooth, more efficiently, because the intent is that if the preparer does a better job considering the various accounting alternatives, documenting those alternatives, whether it's for an estimate or a choice of acceptable accounting principles, then that should make the life of the auditor and the time the auditor spends easier and less. At least that's the theory behind it. Now, we all know in practice that may vary, but it should improve that process and hopefully improve the process of the PCAOB inspectors and the SEC regulators. You know, like Greg, you know, and as I said in my opening comments, I was initially skeptical. Why do we need this? We already got lots of stuff out there on requiring us to make good judgments. But there isn't a lot of information out there, guidance on how to make those judgments. And as we try to move towards more principle-based standards, which I think are a good thing, well, it's always going to be a combination of principles and rules. It's never going to be a perfect set in either way, or if we move towards IFRS, certainly. I think better guidance on how to make those judgments and how to evaluate those judgments and how to use the right information to factor into those judgments. And maybe it will reduce some of the second-guessing in the sense of second-guessing between, you know, where and which I think is bad for investors, by the way, where the SEC or the audit firm reaches one conclusion one year and then the next year with the same set of facts and the same accounting standards reaches a different conclusion, requires a restatement, and then the next year reverses themselves again and reaches the very same conclusion they reached the first time. Those kinds of things happen, both at the with the accounting firms in our professional standards groups, and that power being collective, all the firms, and at the SEC. And that's not good for investors because usually those decisions, you know, really aren't that they're important decisions, but the users would be better off with more transparency and better information about the judgments that were made. So I think this helps investors, and I am an investor, but I'm not representing the investor groups. I think it helps investors because better judgments will be made, better judgments will be documented, better judgments will hopefully be reviewed by the PCAOB and the SEC and everyone else involved, including the auditors. And while we don't talk about disclosures, I think it'll have the net effect of improving the transparency of disclosures. You know, we debated a lot about whether we should put anything in about disclosure. We couldn't come to any conclusions. But I think the net effect is if everybody has a better understanding of the major decisions that are being made, that will improve the disclosures about those decisions, including some of the non-GAAP disclosures, frankly. With respect to who should be issuing this, I mean, you know, I can't speak for the Treasury Committee. I'm not on it. We have members here that are on the Treasury Committee. But I think the purpose of the CIFR Committee is to look at financial reporting. And this is part of the complexity and reducing the complexity in financial reporting. So certainly it is covered within the scope of what the CIFR and the SEC laid out for the CIFR to do. So whether other committees should look at it as well in some other aspect, or maybe the safe harbor. A lot of people are talking about legal liability for auditors. We have not even talked about legal liability for auditors. I'd love to see this eliminate all of our litigation, but I frankly don't think it's going to do that. So, that's not part of the scope of the CIFR committee, and we really haven't, that's not an objective of the judgment framework, and that we leave to our friends on the Treasury Committee.
Gail and Hansen.
Thank you for being here to present today. I think anytime you shed light on the manner in which we go through a process of arriving at our conclusions is important. This is something that all of us have been involved with throughout our careers and as we were taught even in business school. But at the same time, I'm thinking that perhaps any time in our profession that we have an issue of significance, a framework supposedly is going to solve our problems for us, and I would have to echo the sentiments expressed by Cynthia as well as Joe on this particular subject. I'm wondering, and my specific question for you gentlemen is whether we, and Cynthia alluded to it, there's judgment already in place. I wondered if you looked at Rule 203 of the Code of Professional Conduct. And I have that before me, that rule basically says that if there's a conflict with GAAP that ends up with a misleading answer, then you pursue that, and then based on, and the burden of proof is on the accountant or the auditor, to document a departure with GAAP. And the thing that's a little bit perplexing about this is that a couple years ago when the FASB was looking at the GAAP hierarchy, they proposed to rescind that rule. I think at present it's still on the books. It hasn't been rescinded as of yet. Last time I looked in the Code of Professional Conduct, it's still there. But it does allow the auditor to apply and to exercise professional judgment. And it seems to me like we've almost gone full circle here where we wanted to get rid of this and now we're wanting it back. So I don't know, maybe you could just shed a little bit of light on 203 if you considered that.
Greg's looking at me, so I'll try to answer that. These are all good questions and tough ones, I might add. First of all, you know, I think to your first comment that this will not solve all of our problems, I absolutely agree. I don't think, you know, if anybody thinks that somehow putting out a judgment framework is going to stop the inspectors or the auditors from asking questions or any preparer that thinks that's just not going to happen. Anybody that thinks it's going to solve any other or all the problems in the world and make all the judgments perfect, that's not going to happen. Hopefully it'll make a difference in improving the quality of the judgments. We didn't specifically talk about Rule 203, and I made a note of it, and I'll bring it up on our subcommittee. But what we did talk about is the application of GAAP and whether we should talk about the judgment to apply GAAP or some other aspect. In fact, we spent a lot of time talking about whether we should look at economic substance, and then we realized, of course, that GAAP doesn't always follow economic substance. We talked about fair value, but that's, of course, a nightmare, and we never want to I don't think our subcommittee would ever want to propose it. We don't even all embrace it. And so we really couldn't come up with anything else, you know, other than to say that we want the judgments to be appropriate in the circumstances in accordance with GAAP. But as you point out, there may be times, I don't know when somebody should deviate from GAAP, and I don't know what you do. I mean, that continues to be a quagmire of difficulty for everyone involved. So at the moment, I think GAAP is the best thing we have with all of its faults, and so that's the direction we ended up pushing towards. But we really don't address Rule 203, and whether or not that should be readdressed is probably a very good question.
Barbara Roper.
So I guess the best I can say about this proposal is that I think it's just hopelessly naive. I think it will probably have exactly the intended effect that you say at those good companies that are trying to give the best possible information to investors. And it will provide them with a basis for making better judgments. And then that same flexibility and that same approach at those companies that are not inclined to give investors the best possible information, either that are sort of fudging things or that are pushing really aggressive treatments, it will give them a whole new set of tools to use to argue that the approach they want to use is acceptable. And it will make it that much more difficult for auditors to challenge them because they have to, you know, now we have where does it say in the rules that I can't do this? Now you get, this is my professional judgment and you're supposed to respect my professional judgment. You know, it's not enough to let people ask questions. They have to be able to say no. And, you know, I want my, you know, the auditors of public companies to have all the tools at their disposal to say no when they see someone engaging in something that is simply overly aggressive accounting. And it seems to dismiss the notion of bad judgment, that you can document the heck out of something and you can go through a very, you know, sort of robust process for justifying it and come up with a really bad outcome at the end. And that bad judgment seems, you know, to fall under this category of things that we're going to respect. I also think that while, you know, you're careful to say that this doesn't involve a safe harbor, it was absolutely clear from the discussion at the meeting that this is inextricably linked in the minds of many of the members of the committee to the notion of some kind of safe harbor or some kind of protection both from litigation, from regulatory action. And so while it may not be in the formal recommendations of this committee, I think it is, naive, as I say, to suggest that this isn't very much a part of a proposal that's designed to include either a policy or a safe harbor or whatnot that removes some level of accountability from these decisions. And frankly, I want issuers and auditors sweating bullets about whether they're getting right or not, and I think this is one of many aspects of these committee recommendations that will make that less likely that it will happen.
Arnie Hanisch.
I might be the only one, or maybe the first one here, to speak in favor of this, or at least to support it to some degree. I think from my perspective, as I read this section, okay, which is the accounting framework, I viewed this as a reasonable framework. To me, it was very common sense. I could try to analogize it to the Ten Commandments, you know, that, these are sort of common sense kinds of principles that you would undertake to try to come up with judgment. It doesn't trouble me that, I think that from my perspective when I read this, it enables the debate. It wouldn't certainly eliminate the debate, and I think it would clearly provide the auditors with sufficient substance to suggest, you know, has there been a thorough enough review and analysis of relevant literature? The judgments are only as good as the analysis, and two rational people, after reviewing data and literature, can certainly come to different conclusions. But I don't see where this offends, at least me as a preparer, to have a framework where I can engage in debate with my auditor over principles and judgments. I would hope that if they've concluded that I have a poor judgment, then they're going to tell me so. I mean, hopefully we don't ever come to the conclusion that we have bad judgment or poor judgment, as Barbara was suggesting. But I think it certainly provides a reasonable degree of framework for the debate. And I think probably more importantly, it puts into writing the need for appropriate documentation. I think that what, at least my perception as to what was lacking previously, and I think Sarbanes-Oxley has done a marvelous job of encouraging more documentation, that this certainly encourages and reinforces the need for the thoroughness of a memo that documents the thought process that we as preparers go through in reaching the accounting conclusions and judgments that we bring forward and have to live with every day as part of our roles. The one thing that I am a little bit confused about is this paragraph that's on page 5 where it talks about material issues or transactions that would be analyzed pursuant to the application framework should be disclosed in accordance with existing disclosure requirements. And maybe you can expand a little bit upon that as far as the intent, because I could see here's where we as preparers could get into a significant debate with our auditors as to what are those material issues and transactions that would need to be, in quote, more transparent or disclosed. And to what degree those assumptions and conclusions need to be provided within our filings. That was a little bit troubling to me when I read this. So I would appreciate any additional thoughts you might have with respect to the intent.
Ed or Greg, would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, I'll start. First of all, I think your first comment is that this is just common sense, and I think in a way you're right, and maybe that's a little naive, but it is a lot of common sense. But I think by putting it in writing and insisting upon it, it will hopefully improve the judgments and promote more good judgment and less bad judgment. And as a former member of the PCOB said to me at a recent meeting, auditing is all just common sense. So it really fits in, and I think that's true. It does fit in perfectly. I think, as you point out, it enables the debate. I don't think there's any question that Sarbanes-Oxley legislation 404 has improved the quality of reporting, at least in my view, and I think in the view of most. And this is just hopefully another step in the right direction. With respect to the comments about disclosure, you know, again, we struggled with that. I think the comment in there, and I don't have the exact wording. Yeah, which basically says that it has to be, as you point out, should be disclosure in accordance with existing disclosure requirements. And so what we did not want to do in this framework, and perhaps the FASB or the SEC or the PCAOB or somebody, whoever has appropriate authority, I guess it's the FASB or SEC, can insist upon additional disclosures. But we did not want to recommend any new disclosure requirements because we hadn't gone through an appropriate process, we think, to recommend any new disclosure requirements. But we think that by forcing people to consider all of these judgments and document them and give them more consideration, that the hopefully the disclosures under the existing standards will improve. You know, so if you consider the accounting principles that you're going to use and you go through this judgment framework to consider those accounting principles, you probably ought to disclose something that's pretty transparent about that accounting principle used in the footnotes to your financial statements. That's already required, I think, by existing disclosure requirements. But hopefully this will make that disclosure better. We're not suggesting that you disclose all the different accounting treatments you considered or any of that kind of stuff, but hopefully you'll give good, transparent disclosures about your conclusions. Now, the execution of this framework is going to vary company by company and auditor by auditor and so forth, and I think there's going to be a learning curve if this is adopted, so that some companies might apply this to 3 decisions, other companies might apply it to 30 decisions. And, you know, and all the range in between. So I'm not, again, we're not suggesting that all 30, if they apply it to 30, necessarily need to be disclosed. That goes to the existing disclosure requirements. So basically, I mean, I hate to say it, but I think we're punting on this and passing it back up to the SEC and the FASB to consider down the road, but with the intent, and a lot of this is about trying to change behavior in the right direction, with the intent that disclosure would improve.